afternoon.
Question, sir?
You could lead us in our invocation and pledge, sir. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. Let us pray. Father, we thank you for this day and this privilege that we have as a free people to come and to collaborate about the affairs of our community. Bless now our leaders and our citizens as we go before in this day. We thank you and praise you for it. Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, sir.
Angel, if you call the roll, please.
Sure. Mayor Ures.
Here.
Ms. Heimbuckle.
Here.
Mr. Priester.
Here.
Mr. Owen.
Here. All right. Awards. Mary, you got any anything
no, sir.
For tonight?
Not that I'm aware
of. Public comments. Do we have any, anyone's filled out the... I'm going to open this up to the floor on the agenda. Item three is public comments. If anyone wishes to address council at this point for any matters, issue, anything. All right, presentations. John, I don't think we have any presentations. Okay. Let's go to public hearings. 5A, approved case number 44628 for an alcohol beverage location permit to add on-premise consumption to existing off-premise consumption permit at Siggy's Inc., doing business as Siggy's for Less, located at 3337 East Silver Springs Boulevard. Presentation from Mr. Zobler.
Thank you. Siggy's for Less is requesting to amend their permit, or actually seek a new permit, to allow them to sell beer and wine for on-premise consumption. Everything is in order, and the application is in order, and we recommend your approval.
So moved.
I have a motion from Mr. Priester.
Second.
Second from Mrs. Heimbuckle. The applicant here? Is the applicant here? All right, so they're adding to their product line, John?
Yes, sir.
All right. Anyone in the audience wants to speak to this item? Anyone have any questions for staff? Call the roll.
Mr. Priester?
Aye.
Ms. Heimbuckle?
Aye.
Mr. Owen?
Aye. Approved case number 45270 for an alcohol beverage location permit for on-premise consumption at Jersey Shore Boardwalk Grill. Doing business as Jersey Shore Boardwalk Grill, located at 2611 Southwest College Road. John?
Thank you again. This is another alcohol beverage location permit to sell beer and wine. This is a new location. There was no previous license at this location. The application is in order, and we do recommend your approval.
Okay.
So moved.
I have a motion from Mr. Priester.
Second.
Second from Mrs. Heimbuckle. Is the applicant here? You have anything you'd like to say, ma'am? You don't have to, but you're more than welcome to come down and we can chat about anything you want to talk about. All right. Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for staff on this item? Call the roll.
Mr. Priester?
Aye.
Ms. Heimbuckle?
Aye.
Mr. Olin?
Aye. Thank you, ma'am. Good luck to you. Approved case number 44920 for an alcohol beverage location permit for on-premise consumption at Sunrise Restaurant. Doing business at Sunrise Restaurant, located at 619 South Pine Avenue. Again, John.
Thank you. As you know, this is an existing restaurant in the city. There has been no previous alcohol license at this location. However, they are requesting the ability to sell beer and wine at this time. The application is in order and the property is in compliance, and we recommend your approval.
Is the applicant here? Anything you'd like to say, sir? Do you want to have any comments or questions for staff? Call the roll.
Oops, so moved.
Second.
Mr. Priester?
Aye.
Ms. Heimbuckle?
Aye.
Mr. Owen?
Aye. Thank you, sir. Next, approved case number 45236 for an alcohol beverage location permit for on-premise consumption at Slice. Doing business at Slice, located at 2505 Northeast 3rd Street. John?
This is a new pizza restaurant that is opening up in the city, and they are requesting the ability to sell beer and wine between 11 a.m. and 10 p.m. And the application is in order. I do want to inform you that we did receive a a call in opposition to this from Ms. Eloise Kingsley, 404 Northeast 26th Avenue. She's concerned about additional traffic, noise, and gang-related activities from this business.
This is the old, well, I'll say it's the old everything up there.
Right next to Honey's School of Dance, that little strip plaza on 3rd and 25th?
Yes. Okay. In the little little shop that's over there?
Yes.
Okay. And do we have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Motion from Mrs. Heimbuckle, second from Mr. Priester. Is the applicant here? Anything you'd like to say, sir?
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you. Does anyone have any questions for staff on this item? Call the roll.
Ms. Heimbuckle?
Oh.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
Oh.
We're not going to vote yet. Yes, ma'am. Any? Sorry about that. Name and address for the record, please.
Well, you had my call for, it says three homes down there, right behind.
Yeah, can I get your name and address?
And 400, about 400 feet of that.
Yes, ma'am.
Now, we really don't want that noise down there of traffic. Also, the outlet for that strip mall is right at 3rd Street, and it's going to help block up the traffic there more by the time they have the traffic from that and the beauty shop there. And the detour traffic through from the traffic was trying to bypass that light down there.
Yes, ma'am.
It detours through there. And the children walk into school, either have to cross that parking lot in that traffic or else walk out in 3rd Street because there's no place for them to walk.
Okay.
Since the pavement, I mean, the parking lot goes all the way to 3rd Street.
Okay. Can I get your name and address for the record, ma'am? We have to put it on the
record.
You
had my call. Eloise Kingsley at 404.
Okay. Thank you.
And we surely don't want it open at nighttime.
The majority of these establishments, those are their working hours.
Yep.
What are their hours again, John?
They will be open Monday through Thursday from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. and on Friday and Saturday from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Okay. 11 to 10?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Does anyone have any questions or comments from Susie? Mr. Priester, any questions or comments?
No, I have none.
Okay. Well, thank you, ma'am. Did you have anything, ma'am?
Well, it's a kind of a questionable area anyway. I mean, I see police on the other side, and so I'm just wondering if that's going to contribute. I mean, even if it's not a people who drive there, a hangout.
Mm-hmm.
So
it will be.
Sir, do you wish to, you're the applicant? You're the applicant, correct? Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to have you come up. Need your name and address for the record, too. Yeah, no, you can stand right there.
Oh, Penny Fitzgerald.
Come on to the mic, ma'am, please. Thank you.
Penny Fitzgerald. I live in Crystal River, and I'm partners with my son.
Okay.
We're a really small place. We're not getting a full liquor license, just beer and wine, which wine is a natural with pasta, beer with pizza. We don't have any music. We have a television set. If they can hear the television set from their house, it's way too loud. We're surrounded on all four sides by other businesses that are also open at night. As far as gang-related, I think it would be better to have a business in there than a dark, empty corner. We don't mean to be bad neighbors. We've got 25 seats. I can't see us making any noise. I certainly can't hear their TV from the restaurant.
Okay. What's like kind of menu? What kind of?
Homemade pasta, pizza, panini, salad.
Okay. All right. And then just beer and wine. You said it's not full liquor.
Right.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Does anyone have any questions for the applicant? Any questions,
no.
Charles?
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ma'am, did you have any follow-up or anything you'd like to?
Where are the three houses back there?
Yes, ma'am, I'm sorry, we got to get you to the mic.
The three houses are within about 450 feet. I mean, complete within that. We're close.
What, and you're at, and you live out on 25th, or you said 26?
26.
Okay. We live on 26.
So you're behind there, one block off and down and behind.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, well, we no one at this time has any questions, but appreciate your input.
Thank you.
All right, ma'am. Anyone else in the audience wish to speak to this item?
I'm sorry, can I ask just one thing?
You can, but you have to come to the mic. Angel over here is going to get me in trouble and yell at me if I don't get you on the record.
I apologize. It's been three times a bakery and also a pizzeria there. It's been a business since 2006. I don't know why this should change anything. So traffic-wise, kids walking by, it's the same thing.
Thank you, ma'am. Anyone else in the audience? Call the roll.
Ms. Heimbuckle?
Aye.
Mr. Priester?
Aye.
Mr. Owen?
Aye. Good luck to you, ma'am.
Mr. Owen?
Yeah.
Good. I think the IT guys, none of you can get your attachments. I know I can't. I need
to
get to them.
Yeah, just trying
to
get
to log off. Is that right? Everybody needs to get out.
Just close down the Adobe Reader, including all you guys. If you guys can close down the Adobe Reader.
We're going to take a brief pause for technical difficulties.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm trying to download it now. And any Adobe Reader that's open, it's going to
let me download
it.
Adobe Reader.
Separate.
So anybody has the Adobe Reader up has to take it down so he can install it with the attachments.
Yep. And then you can guys go cut the agenda again, and then it should all be there.
Oh, dear God.
I apologize.
I'm told it's not going to take long. But.
Yeah, we want to watch out while we're waiting. Close all tabs. All right. Anybody got anything they'd like to talk about? We're waiting for our computers here.
If you didn't do it, if he tries to install it, your computer will explode in your face. So we'll know who the guilty party is. Didn't blow. This ridge probably is open. There goes your land speed record.
We were going to set record time here tonight and sabotage.
Okay. All right. Who else?
I'm supposed to make this faster.
Yeah. Is everybody closed over here?
No. Somebody's open on their desk. So what you can do is
me? I'm probably the one.
No. Is it me? I don't know.
Kent? Not me.
I got to get you guys over. You're over there, right?
Yeah.
Closed. You're good.
No, I don't
shut
need
it down.
Check mine. It's probably me.
Got that downloaded individually. Somebody else has it over on their desktop at their desk. And I do not know who. Just click open.
Good. John, John, you ready?
Yes.
Thank you.
Susie, we good?
I'm ready.
Staff, everybody, good? This portion of our broadcast brought to you by IT, City of Ocala. We're still working. We were gonna be here in 22 minutes. They've got it out for me.
Yeah, right.
Well, we're at what, 17? Five minutes.
Just couldn't have it. Just for that, I'm gonna ramble. John, you good to go?
Pardon me?
Good to go?
Yeah.
Got yours?
I'm good, thank you.
Okay. I'll make sure everybody's in good shape. Tighten up, Jeff. Knows more about water than he does computers. That's good. That's a good thing. We got the right man for water and sewer. You know more about water and sewer than you do about a computer, don't you? We're in good shape. All right, everybody, staff, everybody good there? All right. Appreciate everybody's patience. We're going to move on second and final reading of ordinances. All these are public hearings. First is adopt ordinance 2011-67 to amend the future land use designation from medium industrial and retail services to retail services for approximately 1.7 acres, property located at 1317 North Magnolia Avenue and 23 Northeast 13th Street. It's case LUC 11-0005. OPZ on 613 gave unanimous approval. It was introduced by Councilmember Gwynn on July 5th, 2011, and Mr. Priester is going to read for Mr. Gwynn.
Mr. President, I move that the ordinance 2011-67 be adopted as provided by the Charter of the City of Ocala. Accept that adoption by sections on second reading be waived and based on the staff's recommendations put the case number LUC 11-0005 and other evidence presented to council.
Second.
We have a motion from Mr. Priester and a second from Mrs. Heimbach. Mr. Gilligan.
The actual ordinance is the ordinance hard copy on your desk. There was a slight revision to that, not the one on the agenda, computer agenda.
Mr. Priester, that I include your motion in the hard copy?
Yes, exactly. I am aware of this copy.
Okay.
An ordinance amending the future land use map series of the City of Ocala, Florida comprehensive plan as required in section 163.3161 through and including section 163.3245 Florida statutes detailing the land use change case number LUC 11-0005 involving to amend the future land use map series from medium industrial and retail services to retail services for property located at 1317 North Magnolia Avenue and 23 Northeast 13th Street, Ocala, Florida, providing for severability, providing for the repeal of conflicting ordinances, and providing for an effective date.
John.
Thank you. You may recall this is the former Bullseye Sports property down on North Magnolia, and the city worked with the property owner to demolish the vacant buildings that were there. The land use and zoning changes in this case is to prepare the property for redevelopment. We do not have any site plans that have been submitted yet. The property is just preparing the property for, like I said, redevelopment.
Appropriate zoning?
Yeah.
Okay. Is the applicant here? Anything you wish to comment?
No comment.
Okay. Anyone else in the audience wish to speak to this item? Counsel, we have any questions for staff?
Yeah.
Call the roll.
Mr. Priester?
Aye.
Ms. Heimbuchel?
Aye.
Mr. Olin?
Aye. Next, adopt ordinance 2011-68 to rezone from M1 Light Industrial and B5 Wholesale Business to B4 General Business for approximately 1.7 acres of property located at 1317 North Magnolia Avenue and 23 Northeast 13th Street. It's case ZON 11-0005. OPZ on 613 gave unanimous approval. It was introduced by Mrs. Rich on July 5th, 2011, and Mrs. Heimbuchel will read for Ms. Rich.
Mr. President, I move that ordinance number 2011-68 be adopted as provided by the Charter of the City of Ocala, accept that adoption by sections on second reading be waived, and based on staff's recommendation for case number ZON 11-0005 and other evidence presented to City Council.
Second.
Motion and a second.
An ordinance amending the zoning map of the City of Ocala, Florida, changing from M1 Light Industrial and B5 Wholesale Business to B4 General Business for certain property located at 1317 North Magnolia Avenue and 23 Northeast 13th Street, Ocala, Florida. Case number ZON 11-0005, providing for severability, providing for the repeal of conflicting ordinances, and providing for an effective date.
John?
Hey, Mr. President, this is the companion zoning ordinance to the property land use ordinance you just heard.
Okay. Anyone in the audience wish to speak to this item? Any questions?
No.
Call the roll.
Ms. Heimbuchel?
Aye.
Mr. Priester?
Aye.
Mr. Olin?
Aye. Next, adopt ordinance 2011-69 to rezone from B2 Community Business to B4 General Business for approximately 0.75 acres of property located at 2251 Southwest College Road, Building 200, and 1621 Southwest 23rd Avenue. It's case ZON 11-0006. OPZ on 613 gave unanimous approval. It was introduced by Councilmember Gwynn on July 5th. Mr. Priester, ask you to read for Mr. Gwynn.
Mr. President, I move that the ordinance 2011-69 be adopted as provided by the Charter of the City of Ocala, accept that adoption by the sections on second reading be waived, and based on the staff's recommendations for the case number ZON 11-0006, and other evidence provided to council.
Second.
Second.
An ordinance amending the zoning map of the City of Ocala, Florida, changing from B2 Community Business to B4 General Business for certain property located at 2251 Southwest College Road, Building 200, and 1621 Southwest 23rd Avenue, Ocala, Florida. Case number ZON 11-0006, providing for severability, providing for the repeal of conflicting ordinances, and providing for an effective date.
John?
This zoning request is consistent with the other uses in the area, and it's also consistent with the comprehensive plan, and we support the request.
Okay. Applicant here? Wish to come down, sir, and speak? Anyone else in the audience wish to speak to this item? We have any questions for staff? Call the roll.
Mr. Priester?
Aye.
Ms. Heimbuchel?
Aye.
Mr. Olin?
Aye. Next, we have consent agenda. Susie, are there any items that you would like to discuss on the consent agenda?
No.
Mr. Priester, do you have any items, consent agenda?
No, sir, I didn't see any need to be pulled. Thank you.
All right, do we have a motion?
So moved.
A motion from Mrs. Heimbuchel?
Second.
Second from Mr. Priester. Anyone in the audience wish to speak to any of the items on the consent agenda? Angel, call the roll.
Ms. Heimbuchel?
Aye.
Mr. Priester?
Aye.
Mr. Olin?
Aye. Introduction and first reading of ordinances and resolutions. Second and final reading will be August 2nd, 2011. First, we introduce ordinance 2011-70, amending section 2-272, appointment, supervision, compensation, and section 2-273, duties, responsibilities, and power of internal city auditor.
Priester?
Mrs. Heimbuchel, she beat you to the punch there, John, but we got a couple of more.
No problem.
An ordinance of the City of Ocala, Florida concerning Chapter 2, Administration, Article 4, Division 5, Internal City Auditor. amending section 2-272, duties, providing for city council annual review of the internal auditor, amending section 2-273, duties, providing for amended title and for the duties, responsibilities, and powers of the internal city auditor, providing for severability, providing for the repeal of conflicting ordinances, and providing an effective date.
Next, introduce budget resolution 2011-145 to accept and appropriate funds from the state of Florida Department of Transportation for the Southwest 13th Street Sidewalk Improvement Project. Introduced Priester. By Mr. Priester.
Nothing.
And well, there's nothing to read there. Finally, we have an introduction of a budget resolution 2011-146, amending fiscal year 2011 budget to appropriate funds received in fees collected for the police and children connecting camp. And that is an introduction of a resolution.
I'll take it.
Mrs. Heinbuckle, the introduction. Again, those final readings are August 2nd. Other business. Do we have any other business? Anyone in the audience? John?
I'm not aware of any of them, sir.
Utility report. Everybody's down representing us at FMPA. They've got this week started, tonight, I believe, and going through the rest of the week.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. City auditor's report.
I want to get your attention, if you would, please, for the introduction of the ordinance you just read.
Yes, sir.
The 272 and 273. I received a memo from Matt Brower regarding this. I don't know if you're aware of that. And he's got some concerns regarding the ordinance. And I was able to discuss it with him, I think it was Friday. But not fully, though, because I have not had a chance to read the memo. I didn't get the memo until Monday. However, I think his concerns here are valid. And you know, these are all covered, actually, in my original ordinance that I have prepared. However, when we did the revision to it, this language were taken out. If you want me to include this in the ordinance, I don't have any problem with it. I can include it if you have a copy of this memo that he sent to you.
Gilligan, August 2nd, this will be the second final reading. We can include that then because we can have full council here and then Matt will be back for full discussion.
I don't know. If it's going to be a substantive change, no, because you didn't advertise it. You didn't advertise in the title, which is what we have to publish. So if it's a substantive change, no, you won't be able to include it. I haven't seen the memo, so I don't know. I don't know what's being suggested. So I just don't know. I know when Oscar asked me to draft this originally, he submitted to me both a policy and an ordinance, and the ordinance was very lengthy, and probably without knowing what's in it, according to the memo Matt sent, it had a lot of stuff that I felt needed to be put in a policy and procedures manual, not in an ordinance. The ordinance generally is broader, and the policy procedures are more specific, and so I don't really care. It's just we just typically don't put very detailed stuff in ordinances about how a department head or a different officer of the city will conduct their business. It's typically done in a policy procedure manual. So my suggestion would be either table it until you know what we've gone without an internal audit ordinance forever anyway. So either table it or introduce it, and if you want to change it, just vote it down and bring back an amended one later on with whatever you think's appropriate. And it may be appropriate. You also tabled it because of the policy and procedure manual that you did bring to you. There was stuff in there that probably conflicted with the employee
correct
procedure manual. That hadn't been done yet, so it may even be more appropriate to bring everything back to you in one package where you have both an ordinance and a policy and procedure manual that staff's recommend both to you and why they put one in one document and the other in the other. That probably might be the most efficient way to deal with it.
Susan?
I agree, because I was going to ask about the policy and procedure manual. Yeah, so maybe it is that we kind of package it all together and get it all. And that will give you time to talk with Matt and
I have already amended that policies and procedure, policy and procedure.
Okay. Okay.
Addressed. This is the only one that's been, the ordinance is the one that I've been discussing with Matt.
So then when Matt comes back, we can, kind of gel all that?
I'm assuming it's staff review level at this point, but it, you know, it's probably easier for y'all to consider everything at once so you know where everything's at and all there.
Mr. Priester?
Oh, yes, I definitely agree.
We can table this to where we can have obviously one full council and then have Oscar and Matt time for the meetings. That, so we need a motion, if that's all right with everybody, to table this and let everybody get back and bring the full package to us.
Already introduced.
Yeah, with 90.
Okay, well, then I have a motion to unintroduce it and then another motion to table it. You can do it all in one motion.
I move to unintroduce ordinance 2011 and table it. 2011-70.
Second.
I've been up here a long time. That's the first time I've heard of an unintroduced.
I don't know if it's in Robert's Rules of Order, but the rules we
it is
been,
now.
we said they're highly flexible.
Hell, Robert, we're going with Gilligan's Rules. We have.
You know, it's about time.
Exactly. We have a motion and a second. We need just in case, does anybody in the public wish to address the unintroduction of our motion? Call the roll.
Mr. Priester?
Aye.
Ms. Heimbuffel?
Aye.
Mr. Owen?
Aye. And then we're going to move to table to the August 2nd meeting. We need a motion, or we're just tabling that. We need a motion for the
table.
We have a motion, we have to entertain a motion to table to the August 2nd meeting.
So moved.
Second.
Motion from Mrs. Heimbuffel, second from Mr. Priester. Call the roll.
Mr. Priester?
Aye.
Ms. Heimbuffel?
Aye.
Mr. Owen?
Aye. All right, Oscar.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, utility report, we went through that. City auditor's report, went through that. City manager's report, John?
No, sir, the city manager's office does not have a report for today. Thank you.
Everybody still working?
Yes, sir.
All right, trash getting picked up, lights are on. Good report. Mayor's police department, Mayor?
No report tonight either.
Chief, anything good going on? City attorney's report, Mr. Gilligan, we adopt resolution 2011-45 to initiate the conflict resolution procedures provided for in statute 164.101 and 164.1061, the Florida Governmental Conflict Resolution Act. Mr. Gilligan.
Council directed me to file a suit on the fire user fee dispute with the school board. The draft of the complaint I have prepared, which is also attached, just so when we get to the dispute resolution meeting, then we'll have a framework for which something to discuss. So ultimately, if we don't resolve it, we file suit. The complaint may look a little bit different, but I think it sets out fairly the outlines of our dispute with the school board. State statute requires that before governments get to litigating with each other, they first attempt to resolve their differences at a dispute resolution meeting. And the procedures under the statute to do that are what the resolution is basically saying we're going to do. We're going to initiate them, and also we're asking that City Council authorize Mr. Owen to sign the letter that's required by the resolution to be sent to the school board, informing them of our resolution and our intent to initiate the dispute resolution procedures. And in that letter, we're asking that we have a meeting with them on August 15th here at City Hall. And I've talked to school board attorney Beverly Morris, and we've between ourselves have agreed ultimately be up to council and the school board to use the services of Ed Cluster, an attorney in the town, to act as a mediator or a meeting facilitator. He has agreed to do that. State statute requires that within 5 days we give notice via certified mail. We will send this letter out under Mr. Owen's signature on Friday, to give us more time, and it requires that the meeting be held within 30 days. Hence, we picked this August 15th date, which I think, Mr. Owen, you have a copy of the letter with the August 15th date on your desk. I've already talked to Ms. Morris about this. It's probably going to be impossible to actually do it on August 15th, but we needed to follow the confines of the statute, so we're going to do that in all probability, but we're going to go ahead and calendar it if you approve all this. The meeting will probably be by stipulation moved to either September or October sometime. August 15 is not a good date for the folks at the school board for obvious reasons, school starting and everything like that, just not a good time. We're requesting in the letter to the school board that certain individuals be present at this meeting, specifically Council President Owen, City Manager Matt Brower, Mr. Leggy, the Finance Director, myself, School Board Chairman Judy Zanetti, the Deputy Superintendent Wally Wagner, Superintendent of Schools Jimmy Ancy, Ms. Morris, their attorney, and they have a special counsel named Susan Siegel from Gainesville. Obviously, council can decide and the school board can decide who they actually want to be there, but I had to take a stab in the dark who you would want to designate to be there, and I did it in the letter. If you want somebody different, now's the time to tell me, and we'll revise all that and say who you wish to have at the meeting.
Mr. Priester, here's the letter. You want to look at that real quick? That's the one we're looking at.
So it's not what I need you to do, or I was suggesting council do, is pass the resolution. Would be one motion. The second motion would be to authorize the Mr. Owen to execute the dispute resolution letter that is attached, or authorize a letter revised to your direction. If you choose to make revisions on it, I've got 5 days to get it revised and get out, so it's sort of a proposed draft at this point.
I would like to attend the initial meeting.
John, you want to ask?
This is a sunshine meeting too, so it'll be publicly noticed, and Ms. Carr can be there. Anybody else in the public is interested?
Is there any comments?
No.
Okay. Mr. Priester, any comments?
No, everything seems to be in order, Pat. I think you've made a good selection there as far as recommendations from the city staff and the president.
All right, so we need number one, we need a motion for this resolution, and then we'll second motion in agreement for this letter, and then we will send it out as Mr. Gilligan instructed. So a motion for the resolution.
So moved.
Motion from Mrs. Heinbockel.
Second.
Second from Mr. Priester. Anyone in the audience? Pat, any follow-up?
No, sir.
Call the roll.
Ms. Heinbockel?
Aye.
Mr. Priester?
Aye.
Mr. Olin?
Aye. And then the second motion will be a confirmation of this letter that will be heading to the school board.
Yes, so moved.
A motion from Mr. Priester.
Second.
Second from Mrs. Heinbockel. Anyone in the audience? Call the roll.
Mr. Priester?
Aye.
Ms. Heinbockel?
Aye.
Mr. Olin?
Aye. Okay, the folks that are going to schedule to be there, you do need to schedule. That's for you, Mr. Owen, and Mr. Brower, if you let him know. You do need to calendar the August 15th date. If we can do it then, great. I don't think we're going to be able to. We'll probably be moving it, but for right now, it will get scheduled then. Next is an agreement with D. Brown, the supervisor of elections. We have always used her. I don't know that we'd have a choice because we wouldn't know how to conduct an election on our own anyway. We don't have the polling places and machines or anything like that. So we pay D. to do the elections. She's her first time has presented with us a contract. The contract's fine. It just memorializes what we do anyway. But when she presented me the agreement, Angel and I met with her to discuss one thing in the contract that's a little different, and it's imposed upon her by state law, but she would not be able to gin up an election under state law now, consistent with some of our charter requirements on a runoff, because of the lead time now required to get absentee ballots, mainly the military personnel overseas. Our charter technically could, if we had a runoff election, our charter could require us to have the runoff election in a period of time that by statute she couldn't comply with because of the absentee ballots. So we're going to have to amend the charter. I have a legal issue about whether we have to amend it by referendum or amend it by ordinance, and haven't quite figured that one out, but we are going to have to amend it to comply with her contract, which is being, and state law, quite frankly, we just couldn't do it. While we were discussing that with her, she said, you know, y'all might want to consider, so we're bringing it up, you might want to consider the runoff issue, I'm sorry, if you, the replacement of a candidate, and you can avoid runoffs. And what you do is, right now the charter says if they're within 120 days of the scheduled election, the council just appoints to fill their...
Are we talking about runoffs or special elections?
Runoffs, but a special elect... No, I'm sorry, special elections. If there's a vacancy, special election, you're right, special elections if there's a vacancy. The proposal would be that if there was a vacancy, somebody was incapacitated or died or whatever and couldn't finish out their term, that the remainder of council by majority vote appoint somebody from that district to fill out the not the remainder of the term, but the remainder of the term to the next election. So if somebody was 3 years into their term and they got deathly ill or they were moving or God forbid died, there would be 1 year remaining in that term. Council would appoint the successor. And that person, the election for that seat would come up at the normal time. If there was a situation where somebody had to vacate their seat the first year into their four-year term, the appointment would not be for the remainder of the four-year term. The appointment would be till the next municipal election. So if they're 1 year into it, they would be appointed for another year to the next municipal election. They would then be there would then be an election then, not for a four-year term, but for the remainder two-year term. That way we keep council staggered, which the charter has intended. They still have three and two, and similarly for the mayor. So in theory, the longest anybody would ever be specially appointed by council for a vacated seat would be 1 day less than 2 years, I guess. And if you avoid having, we've never had the problem, but if we avoid having elections for vacated seats, it's going to cost you, it'll save you about $100,000. Now, Ms. Brown, I haven't checked this, but I don't have a reason to disbelieve her. She told me, I think that's the way Bellevue and Dunellen do it.
Yes.
Already. They don't have a special election to fill a vacancy. So. So I need some direction from you on that. I have a proposed ordinance that would deal with that if you're so inclined. If you're so inclined, we can put it on the agenda the next council meeting, and we can do that along with changes we've got to make anyway because of the statutory requirements about the amount of time for notices for elections.
This item that you've got here, this is for the upcoming election?
It wouldn't be in effect for this upcoming. The contract would be. I don't know that we can get it done.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. This is just we've got to do this. We got to do a contract with her for
regardless
the October or whatever date we've got
correct
election.
Right, and I've got to change the charter to deal with the time issue if there happens to be a runoff. So that might be an opportune time to deal with this vacancy issue. Now, on the runoff issue, she's also suggested, once again, it's a cost savings. Council has considered this and rejected it 6 months to a year ago, that instead of having a runoff that the winner, whoever gets the plurality of votes, is simply the winner. Not a runoff between the two candidates that can get less than a majority, but are one and two in a three or four or five person race.
Okay.
Pat?
Yes, sir.
She disclosed in this letter here that the ordinance that it's $100,000 for the special election for the supervisor of elections. That's the cost. That cost for a special election is understanding. Did she disclose to you what it actually would be for runoffs, what the cost is?
She has a formula. It's so many, cents per voter, and it depends on the election. It's cheaper to do, and I think she even gave me a table. I don't have it. I can get that for you. It's actually cheaper for her to do election. It's less per voter when you do it during the national elections, the national and congressional elections, because it coincides. It's countywide, and she's set up for that. And so there's economies of scale because she's doing elections for federal, state, and the county and all the different local elections. So the cost per voter goes down, and our bill goes down. We don't coincide with them, and council's directed that you don't wish to do that. Previously, we don't coincide, so our cost per voter is more expensive. And I think it's 70 cents per voter, I think is her. So she has a formula to try to figure out how much it costs her to do it.
She's used that formula for quite a few years, I gather.
I don't know.
Thanks.
I don't know what the formula is, and I don't know how long she's been using it, but
yeah, right. I can imagine. It's an astonishing number there.
The runoffs, the way they are set up now and structured now, she can do those without any sort of conflict with the state statute, or no? And so that's just a financial consideration.
No, it would still require that amount of time.
So. Okay, what amount of time is she? Well, does she need?
Let's see my memo here.
She needs absentee ballots 45 days prior to the scheduled election. Okay.
You're right, 45 days.
Okay.
And she has some logistical time added on to that. So for her to get the ballots, she's got to order the ballots, have them printed, get them back, proof them. So the 45 days is the amount required by statute. But it gets tacked onto that. I think she told me it was 20 days at the earliest to get the ballots printed, back, proofed, and approved to go out within that 45-day window. So that puts you to 65, and what she told me, she said, if the ballots are messed up and I got to send them back to the printer, I'd prefer having 75 days.
Okay.
So that's where that number came from.
Okay.
That's what runs into our charter. So when we have an October election and charter's taking office on first Tuesday in December.
Right.
That's the conflict. So, so that's got to all be changed. My concern, it's a highly technical issue about whether you have to do it on a referendum or ordinance, but my concern is, what if we had a referendum? We got to change our charter to comply with state law. What if we had a referendum and the voters said no? What do you do then? I don't know. It's a quandary. So my sense is that we can probably do it by ordinance because it's almost imposed by state law. Indirectly, our charter's in conflict with state law, so we'll probably have to fix it. But there's a technical rules about how you amend charters. Some you can amend by ordinance, some you have to do by referendum, some sections by referendum. So first issue is the contract.
Contract for the election. You got to do that.
Sir, you got to pay her. This is what we've been paying her in the past. And she's the only game in town. So, there's no other vendor. There's no other vendor out there.
We can't throw out.
We can't do an IT bid.
Throw out a little RFQ or something.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. So let's take a motion, and that'll just be for the upcoming election that we've got a choice. We have to allow her to run the election. A motion from Mrs. Heimbuckle.
Second.
Second from Mr. Priester. Anyone in the audience?
Call the roll.
Ms. Heimbuckle?
Aye.
Mr. Priester? Mr. Olin?
Aye. I guess, Pat, just put all of this back together and bring this back, and we'll have full council at next meeting.
Well, do you want me to just give you a cafeteria-style plan of different ordinances, some doing it, some eliminating runoff, some eliminating special elections for vacated seats, and one that just leaves it the same and deals with some time constraints, and y'all can pick and choose which one you want to introduce?
I feel comfortable with the, excuse me, I feel comfortable with the cafeteria layout you're talking about, with the ones that you have exemplary for all the different municipalities, for all the different ones that are laid out the way they have been and brought to. That way it'll be more information for council members that aren't here when they get here.
Okay. Yep. Gives you a full range of options.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a personal thing. I just think it's two, even that's two separate things. To have a council member that does get elected for whatever reason cannot fulfill a term. What you had proposed, the one day less than 2 years, that because we all
right.
have our appointees, that we have our interim successors fulfilling out that, well, I say that term, filling out that time up into a next city election and then going, I mean,
well, it's not until the next city election, it's till the seats felt that your appointee would fill in until
the next, I mean, if it yeah. fell in the window of
right.
you're a week into your term and God forbid something happens and having to, you wouldn't be going through to the next election. But that would be a two, like you're saying, a day short of 2 years. And then the runoffs are a different, it's two
right.
separate
two
things.
Two separate issues. Special elections and runoffs.
I mean, we've never had a council seat vacated in my experience, and I don't, you know, it may have happened in our history, but I'm unaware of it. It would be a fairly rare experience. I thought her suggestion as to how to fill a vacated seat made a lot of sense because, A, it's incredibly rare, but if it did happen, you know, it's costing you, according to her, $100,000 to fill it. And council would only be filling it for literally, worst case scenario, a day less than 2 years.
Right.
All right. Well, you said you can have that for our next meeting then. Just bring all that back.
Yes, sir.
And then we'll... Everybody will be back, and we'll have full council, and we can go from there. So we're set for this first for October election.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
The next thing is I need to walk on, if you don't mind, Carolina Transformer Superfund. Something that's come up that I need to at least bring to your attention. Mr. Brower and I did meet with Congressman Stearns's aide yesterday, met with him for about an hour. I had a good meeting with him. He's going to talk to Congressman Stearns about that. Of course, he told us that I wouldn't expect anything with this current Congress or as long as the Senate's controlled by the Democrats and the White House is controlled by the Democrats, there's probably not going to be any change to the Superfund law. He said if the Republicans capture both houses and the presidency, there probably could be an amendment to it, but the amendment would probably be fairly well focused. And we suggested to him the focus is that you couldn't just willy-nilly sue a municipality under it unless you had some level of initial proof that would allow you to file a complaint. And if you did do that without that initial level of proof, then the suing party and or the attorney that brought it would be responsible for the defendant's cost and attorney's fees because you didn't really bring it in good faith. You didn't have, you know, a threshold level of evidence from which you had a good faith basis to believe that the defendant you sued, in this case the city, was actually liable under the statute. I think he liked that idea. He asked me to propose something to him in writing, which I will do. In the meantime, Mr. Brower was contacted by the attorney for the Kissimmee Utility Company or corporation or cooperative, I can't remember which one it is. And ma'am, I think Grant. Grant. That's Grant's name. Some French name. Grant with a French last name. And he had contacted Matt and then talked to me yesterday. He has talked to 17 to 19 other local governments or local government-run utilities, and they have loosely formed all in the Super Carolina Superfund litigation group. They want to have a spokesman for however many they get. Right now they've got 17. He told me there was another two that he thought were going to come on board, and if Cala came on board, it'd be 20. I talked to a lawyer in Washington, D.C. that represents three municipalities in the Maryland and Virginia area, so maybe 23, 24, and I gave him this guy's phone number, an email. But they want to go to the attorney for Carolina Transformer and say, look, we represent this larger group of potential defendants, and we will settle with you now for between $7,500 and a cap of $10,000 on behalf of each of the municipalities if you'll take it now. So the lawyer for the plaintiffs group, Carolina Transformer, in his initial letter, demand letter to us, said that he was going to be filing the lawsuit on or around July 31st, so it's the 19th or 20th today. So I needed to get some direction from council about what you wanted to do, and whether we want to be on board with this group, this loosely formed group, or not. I got to tell you, quite frankly, I think I made my feelings well known about what I think about this lawsuit and the law in general. But if you could get out of the lawsuit now for $7,500 to $10,000 and not get sued, at least from an attorney fee perspective, you're probably way ahead of the game. So, from an economic perspective, that's probably not a bad deal for the city. The other part of it is, and this was somewhat loosely right now, even if we don't get it settled, if council chooses to participate and you don't get it settled, probably it's in our best interest to team up with some of the other defendants. We could pay one attorney, contract with one attorney, probably in the North Carolina area, to represent all of the defendants at once. And obviously the legal fees would be significantly reduced because they have multiple defendants, but defendants that have sort of a common interest. So the legal fees would be significantly reduced. So it's probably worth our while to stay in touch with them, even if you don't want to authorize a settlement of $75,000 to $10,000. It's probably worth our while to stay in touch with them in case we do get sued and the settlement doesn't go through. So my recommendation from an economic perspective is that you agree to allow them to negotiate on our behalf for between the $7,500 and $10,000, even though I don't agree with it on a philosophical perspective. From an economic perspective, I have to recommend that to you. It's probably the city's best economic interest.
Do you want me to start?
I maintain we stay on the side of mm-hmm. philosophical, and I will once again, this is, it's like cold calling. I'm just going to send a bunch of letters out and scare a bunch of people and see how much money I can get. So I'm going to shoot high, and if I can send out 100 letters and try to demand 100,000 from everybody, if I can get at least 5,000 or 7,000, that's still a pretty good day on a cold call spam. So I appreciate the economic suggestion, but I'm still over in the pound sand area.
Well, in the pound sand arena, Pete, what's Pete's last name? I forget it. From your electric, Larry. Fallhaber. He's been charged with the electric substation since 1986 when we supposedly bought these things, and he gave an affidavit for me the other day, and he had re-researched the records and was very helpful to me in that regard, and came up with not only the same stuff that we only purchased them, we didn't have any trade-ins. He actually discovered some other evidence that was suggestive that in fact we did have trade-ins. We purchased at the same time from other companies from Carolina Transformer, other transformers, and the price we paid for those transformers was almost identical to the price we paid for the ones from Carolina Transformer. I wasn't swift enough to figure out, well, why does that mean anything? And I said, Pete,
what's that got to do with anything? He goes, well, it shows the market price for transformers back then, and if we had a trade-in on one of them, it would, you would have noticed it in the price differential. Oh, should have had a V8. So it's always helpful to talk to people that know their business. So anyway, he prepared an affidavit to that effect. We sent it. He also told me that since he's been here since 1986, it really hadn't been our practice to trade in transformers. We would send them up to places. We took them out of inventory, and then we send them to places that actually buy them, but not trade them in with people who are buying them from it. He said that really wasn't our practice and procedure. And he said when he started working there, that wasn't the practice and procedure. So more evidence of, well, all we did was really buy two of these things. So it was helpful. He knew about this because he read about it in the newspaper. So.
Susan? I'm with Daniel. I think we should stay where we are.
Mr. Priester?
I'm very adamant about the same way we're looking at it as a whole here. We need to retain our attorney to do the best he can to represent us and ensure that we don't have to be out there at any other expense for any of those extortionists.
Okay. Keep that group in your email account and tell them hey every now and then and send them a smiley face on Facebook or something. But the political climate, whatever it is in Washington, the political climate here is to
fight.
Continue to fight.
Okay. Got one more ship on. That's it for tonight.
All right. We've got our informational items. We still have our budget workshops scheduled going out through there, as you can see. So if you have any questions for staff or anything on that, as always, get with them. Comments by mayor?
None tonight.
Susan?
I do not have anything. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Priester?
Just make one little statement here, short and brief, that maybe you might want to be aware of if you have children around, grandkids. There was something out today. I was watching a television program with Dr. Oz, and it's at every convenience store and every filling station and stuff along the highways now throughout the country. Three states are working to ban, and they're almost successful with it. And it's the bath beads they're discussing. And it's a bath bead item that they sell over the counter, and they're snorting it today, the youth are. And it's a very hallucinogenic product that they have that's inside this material. And it causes permanent damage to their brain. So I was kind of taken by that, being that I have quite a few grandkids out there, and they're all over the United States at the time. So pass it along, a little bit of information that you might want to do a little research about it and make sure you're aware of it. They say that we need to get with our legislatures to make sure each state, each city can make people aware of it, and let's try to get that out of these hands of these children. Thanks. That's all I have.
All right. John, if you would let Matt know this letter that we got with the school board. As Mr. Gilligan was saying, tentatively we're sending it for the 15th, but it looks like it's going to be rescheduled. And John, same thing, you're on this letter, so we'll request in presence, and then obviously Mr. Gilligan, if you could keep us all informed as to what their response is and what their date would be. And keep a tally on it, John, between now and when we do finally get a meeting, because whatever number it is now, with school starting, I promise you the fire department and the police department, obviously the fire department, between now and an October meeting, will be out there again somewhere at a school taking care of something. So we can keep a running tally, so we'll be current and fresh at that meeting. So with that, we tried for 22 minutes, but we didn't make it, so we are adjourned.